Welcome to the Three Creeks Church Podcast. We're a church in Gahanna, Ohio that exists to help people find and follow God. We hope this message encourages you, challenges you, and helps you discover how much God really loves you.
All right, welcome to week three of a series that we're calling The Blessed Life, according to Jesus, because the blessed life, according to the books on the New York Times bestseller list, man, they're saying different things than what Jesus did. If you go and read a story about, or read a book about how to have a blessed life, it will likely say something different than what Jesus was saying in what we refer to as the Sermon on the Mount. But you see, when Jesus preached this Sermon on the Mount, the people that were listening that day were also a little confused because Jesus was singing a different song than the song that they had been raised on. It was confusing to them too. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 1 and 2, it says, Jesus saw the crowds. He went up on a mountainside and sat down. And these are the shores of the Sea of Galilee, right here. This is the mount or the hill that Jesus went up and sat down on. And his disciples, his close followers, kind of came in close. But then there was a crowd of people that was there too. And we've talked about this. Why would there be a crowd of people following Jesus? He's not rich. He doesn't hold any political office. He's not powerful. He's just a traveling teacher. But what we learn at the end of chapter 4 is that Jesus has been doing some miraculous things. He's been meeting people in new ways, and people, nothing's going to keep these people away. And I've been thinking some about that crowd over the last couple of weeks. And I've been thinking about how, man, nothing was going to keep them away. I don't know how far they walked to get there, but I imagine some of them walked a great distance to be with Jesus because they heard that he meets people in special, miraculous ways. And I just thought, man, they showed up that day. Jesus sat there on that hill, and they showed up there, and they're talking to one another. They're saying things like, Jesus is going to speak today. And he might do something miraculous today. He might say something or do something. We might experience something that our lives might never, ever be the same again. There's no way that we're missing this. Let's get up there and let's get up there close so that we can hear him. And man, I just have been praying for our church that through this whole series that we would be like that crowd. That there would be a sense of anticipation with us when we come to gather together. That we would have this anticipation like, man, I think God might speak to me today. He might do something amazing in my life today. I might experience something today and my life might never be the same. And man, listen, I've been going to American Church long enough to know that it's easy to just drive here, show up, say hi, leave another Sunday. But man, my prayer for our church is that we would have the attitude of the crowd where we want to kind of get up close and say, God, what are you saying today? You might do something today that I've never experienced before. Actually, last week I talked about this idea of mourning. This idea that Jesus says in this Sermon on the Mount that it's okay to cry. It's okay to hurt. It's okay to be very disappointed on the inside. And it's okay to express that emotion. And a friend of mine texted me on Monday. She was unable to be here at church last week, and she texted me on Monday morning, and this is what she said. She said, I've just been in a funk. Maybe the weather, maybe age, maybe hormones, I don't know. But I've been super sad, and I've been trying to hold it together, and I'm not sure why. And I finally just let it all out this morning, and I went on a walk. I feel so refreshed. It's crazy how God finds ways to show you his grace. And I said, it is. It really is crazy. Most of the time when God has met me and spoken to me, it is at a time where, man, I didn't expect it. And I don't know what you're expecting this morning, but I wonder if he'll show us his grace today. So when Jesus sat down and the crowds were gathered, anticipating what he would say, he opens up with a banger. His disciples came to him, verse 2, he began to teach them. He said, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And if anybody there was taking notes, they were confused as they wrote down Jesus' words. But this was his opener. 8 simple, powerful, poetic statements. We could call them the string of blessings, because they all start with the word blessed, which is the Greek word makarios, which the best way for me to describe it to you so that we understand it is happy. And so you could translate this, oh, how happy are the poor in spirit, and oh, how happy are those who mourn, oh, how happy are the meek. Jesus, please, please explain, because at first glance, this doesn't make any sense. It almost feels like it's upside down. And Jesus says, through the course of the whole Sermon on the Mount, it is. I'm talking about a kingdom that is upside down. It's different than how you naturally think this is going to work. We're going through one of these at a time because we don't want to miss what Jesus says about the blessed life. So here's today's beatitude. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Oh, how happy are the meek. I don't know what comes to mind when I say the word meek. You might have a definition. You've probably heard that word from time to time. You probably don't use it that often. But the word that Jesus uses here, Matthew writes it down in Greek. It's the word praus, P-R-A-U-S, praus. I'm going to say that word a lot because I want you to know that that's the word that Jesus used. Technically, he spoke Aramaic, I think. Matthew wrote it down in Greek so that everybody could read it. We translated it to English, and we say meek, and that actually is part of why this is a complicated word to try to interpret. In fact, I'll say this. 8 years, for me, of preaching regularly, I preach like 40 times a year or so, 8 years of preaching, I have never been so befuddled by the differing comments about one word. Man, all week I would listen to this pastor preach about this, read this commentary, read that commentary, and there was so much of this person saying that this person wasn't correct, and this person saying this wasn't correct, and both of them are trusted resources. In fact, as I wrote my message on Wednesday, I actually wrote, meekness is like strength under control. And I wrote this illustration about how it's like a Kentucky Derby horse and not a wild horse. And then on Friday, I listened to one of my good friends preach this passage. I was out in my yard. I was mulching. I was listening to it. And he opens with, some people say this is strength under control. And they're probably going to use an illustration about a horse. And that's not it at all. I'm like, oh, I love you. But I called him and said, you've ruined my weekend. I have to write the whole thing again. No, I was confused, and maybe in a good way, it made me study and look a little bit deeper into it. My plan today is actually to offer a little bit of all of these opinions. The good news is that they don't really compete with one another. They don't conflict one another. They overlap and they complement one another, and maybe as a church, we can get a really good idea of what praus means. Jesus writes, or he says, blessed are the meek, blessed are the praus. Oh, how happy are the praus. Here are the 3 translations that I heard most regularly. It means, oh, how happy are the humble. Oh, how happy are the gentle. And oh, how happy are the unimportant. Praus. It's not used very many times in the New Testament. In fact, only 4 times. One of them is in Matthew chapter 11, just 6 chapters later in the same book that we're looking at this Sermon on the Mount. 4 Gospels open up the New Testament. Maybe you've heard Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. In those 4 books, there are 89 chapters that are written, and most of it is about the life and the ministry of Jesus. And there are countless stories of his birth and his miracles and his ministry and his death and his resurrection. They all tell the story about Jesus. Only one time in 89 chapters is Jesus quoted as describing his heart. One time, 89 chapters, he describes his heart, and it's in Matthew chapter 11, and this is what he says. These are some of my favorite verses in the Bible. He says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle, I am prous, and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." Jesus, when given the opportunity to describe his own heart, he actually says, I'm prous in heart. Dane Ortlund, who wrote a book called Gentle and Lowly, that's really takes those verses right there and expounds on them. It's an amazing book. This is how he describes Jesus' heart. He says he's meek, he's humble, he's gentle. Jesus is not trigger happy. He's not harsh, reactionary, easily exasperated. He is the most understanding person in the universe. He is prowess. Let me just ask you, let's ask ourselves, am I prowess? Am I gentle? Am I humble? Do I put myself below others so that I seem unimportant like Jesus? I think at first I read this and I go, man, is this really that big of a deal? Aren't there some other attributes that I could add to my life that would have a little bit more bang for the buck? Do we really need to be gentle? Because it wasn't at the top of my list. Sometimes I like to ask my wife out of nowhere funny questions, especially would you rather. And one of the questions I asked her a couple weeks ago, I said, "Morgan, I said, I just got a question for you. Do you think I'm funny?" And I was like, "Scale of 1 to 10, how funny do you think I am?" And she goes, "You're like a 7. I was like, "That's pretty good, I'll take it." She goes, "More like a 6. And I said to her, I said, do I ever think I'm funny, but I'm actually not? And she said, "Oh, yeah." And I said, "When?" She goes, "Mostly when you preach." I was like, "Oh, okay." But she's right. And then I asked her another one. I said, "Morgan, would you rather me gain 200 pounds but be a lot more gentle, or get like triathlete ripped but not get more gentle at all?" And she goes, "I'll take the big gentle guy." I was like, man, I think this is a pretty big deal to her. One time I spent some time with a very close friend of mine. I spent a whole week with him. This man I would describe as prowess. He is meek, he is humble, he is gentle. This man loves me and I love him, and we cheer for each other. He's a pastor in Texas. And I said to him, "You know, Mike, if you could help me grow in one area, what would that be?" And he said, "Man, Joel, I think if I were you, I would seek to grow in gentleness." And so what I'm trying to say is that even though it wasn't at the top of my list, it is at the top of others' lists for me. For the people that are close to me, they really desire that I would grow in gentleness. Of all things, Mike, really? Gentleness? And I think that's because, man, if I'm going to try to love my wife and raise my children and be a good friend and love Jesus and become like him, being prowess, being gentle, being humble, that's when Jesus had one chance to describe his heart. He said, "I am prowess and humble in heart. I am gentle. I am humble." It was confusing to the people then, and it is to us now, because we read, "Blessed are the meek, blessed are the humble, blessed are the prowess, for they will inherit the earth." The crowds go, "Wait a minute, no. The meek aren't the ones that take land. It's the powerful people that take land. It's the aggressive people. It's the loud people. It's the go-getters. It's the take no prisoners attitude. That's how you inherit the land. That's how you conquer the neighboring country. That's how you get it. You got to go get it. You don't get it if you're meek." And Jesus says, "No, that's not how it works in my kingdom." He says, "I'm trying to tell you guys that the way that I'm asking you to operate is upside down. Think of a few other things that Jesus said. Maybe you recognize some of these phrases. The one who is first shall be last, and the one who chooses to be last shall be first. It's upside down. He says, whoever wants to be great among you, whoever wants to be at the top, must first become a servant. This is going to be upside down. If you want to be exalted, you're going to be humbled. But if you want to be humble, man, that's who God chooses to exalt. This is upside down. And so when Jesus says, blessed are the meek, blessed are the gentle, blessed are the humble, the unimportant, for they will inherit the land. The people are going, man, that doesn't seem, it just seems upside down. And Jesus says, exactly, exactly. And to me, man, I think it sounds nice. I really do. I do think it sounds nice. But practically speaking, being prouse doesn't seem like the characteristic I need in order to get the promotion. It doesn't seem like the attribute that I need to embody if I'm trying to make the sale. Being prouse doesn't help the drivers around me know how to drive better next time. You know what I mean? Being prouse doesn't let the referees know that they need to improve. Being prouse is not as effective when I'm trying to get my kids to bed. Being prouse isn't going to help my DoorDash driver know that he messed up. Being prouse isn't probably the best strategy to grow a church. And as I say that out loud, I just sense Jesus saying to me, Joel, do you trust me? Do you trust me? Do you trust that it's better to lower yourself and let me elevate you? Do you trust me? Will you become like me? And will you leave the results to me? Man, we might not see it in the short run, but Jesus says, if you become like me, what do you think is going to happen? I just sense Jesus every time I have a rebuttal. Jesus, being prouse, that's not how this is going to work. I just sense him saying, do you want to live the blessed life or not? According to me. As I thought more about this, I just thought, man, this to be gentle and to be humble and to lower one's self is so rare. It is so unique. I can remember being in high school. We were sitting at McDonald's. I think it was after a soccer game. My whole family was there. My brother, my sister, my mom, my dad. And I don't even remember what we were talking about. Probably nothing, because out of nowhere, my dad pulled out his phone, and on the McDonald's cup, it said, how are we doing? And it gave a phone number to call in and give a review. And my dad just punched in the number and called the McDonald's customer care hotline, and the person said, hello, how can I help you? And my dad said, well, I'm sitting here at McDonald's, and I'd like to give a review. And the person said, okay. And my dad said, these fries are unbelievable. They are hot, they are crispy, they are salty. My drink was cool, the ice machine worked. We have had a tremendous experience today here at McDonald's. And the person on the other line, on the other end of the phone said, this is the first time anyone has ever done this to me. I can remember going on road trips growing up with my dad, and there'd be a truck in front of us, and it would say, how's my driving? And he would call. And he would say, right between the lines, the speed limit. You wouldn't believe the driving is very, very well done. And the person on the other end of the line would say, I've never received a phone call like this in my entire career. Because to be gentle, to be humble, to lower oneself, to be kind, to be others oriented, it is so unique, it's so rare. To get angry, to send in a nasty review, these things, man, they're just so easy to do. And they're just so acceptable to get mad at whoever didn't make your burger right or whatever. It's just so easy to be triggered and to be prouse in those situations is to be like Jesus. And man, as I studied this word, I really felt myself, to be honest with you, overcomplicating it. And that's what I do sometimes. When I study the Bible and I read about a word, I just start overcomplicating it. Sometimes implementing it is very, very simple, but I forget to do that part. I walk away from learning something. I go, oh, that's a nice idea, but I fail to implement it often in very simple ways. And so one of the reasons, well, and here's what I'll share with you. I'm going to try to implement this idea in my life, and I invite you to consider doing the same. Here's one of the reasons that being prous leads to a happier life. This is why Jesus was right, is being prous, being humble, being gentle, being unimportant, it diffuses conflict. It de-escalates anger, and it is an antidote to anger. Proverbs 15:1 says that a gentle answer turns away wrath, and a harsh word stirs up anger. When the writer of Proverbs wrote that, a gentle answer turns away wrath, and a harsh word stirs up anger, what this person didn't know about the brain then that we know now is that in our brains there's something called mirror neurons. Have you heard of these things? Mirror neurons. What they are is there's things in our brain, there are these sensors that allow us to begin feeling how another person who's right in front of us is feeling. And so it's what actually enables us to sympathize or empathize with someone. When someone's crying, we're more likely to start crying with them. It's when you're at a concert, everybody's buzzing, having a good time. You just naturally go, well, if everybody here is having a good time, I'm having a good time. And specifically with anger, you've experienced this. When someone around us is angry or angry with us, it's just so easy for these mirror neurons to take over our brains, and we begin to rise up and meet that anger with more anger. A harsh word stirs up anger. We've all been in conflicts with somebody where it just feels like it got out of, we don't even know what we were fighting about to begin with. Just anger stirred up anger. But a gentle answer turns away wrath. Jesus is saying, if you want to avoid a lot of heartache, a lot of problems, if you want to avoid making a lot of apologies, if you want to have no regrets, if things are escalating and you want to be the kind of person that brings it down, a gentle answer turns away wrath. Blessed are the meek. Happy are the meek. Happy are the humble. Happy are the gentle. So here's what I'm taking away from this beatitude. When other people raise their voice, I lower mine. When others raise their voice, I lower mine. That's it. It's not that complicated, and I'm sure it doesn't surprise you. But just imagine for a second the effect that that could have on some of your relationships if you just took that and made that a priority in your life. When the volume goes up, when the temperature goes up, when the intensity goes up, when the volume of others' voices goes up, I lower mine. Whether it's with a boss, or a child, or a spouse, or a roommate, or a neighbor, or somebody that's serving you. When the volume of other people's voices go up, mine goes down, because a gentle answer turns away wrath, and a harsh word stirs up anger. And so when you think about it that way, you go, man, maybe Jesus was right. Maybe he's onto something. Maybe when Jesus said, happy are the prous, he was right. Because I can tell you, man, I've been prous. I've had moments. And I have also, on the other hand, been a jerk. And I think, I think I'm a pretty gentle person when it comes to new people. If you show up at our church, or you meet me at a park, or you meet me at a restaurant, I would consider myself to be a relatively gentle, kind, humble person. At least I try to be. What stinks is that it's this non-prousness comes out the most with the people that I love the most. The people that live in my house. And so, man, I told you this story last week where I had this moment with Judah when I just felt like God gave me the strength to be prous. There's so much inside of me that wanted to be like, dude, stop crying, get over it, rally, go to your room. But instead, in this moment, I was gentle, I was humble, and I talked with Judah about how it's okay to cry. And he just jumped into my arms, and he just cried, and we had this moment. And I'm just telling you, man, I left that experience. I feel like I did a pretty good job of being like Jesus in that moment. I was so happy. Man, I laid my head down that night so happy that I had been that way towards my son. But I can also remember too many stories where I wasn't. I can remember one specifically on my birthday about 2 years ago when some of you guys know this story, but our dog ran away for like 42 days. And that's kind of a long, funny story that maybe I'll tell another time. But in those early October days, our family was, you know, we heard about a dog. We were in Pataskala looking for him. We were driving around. My whole family was in the van. Morgan wasn't there for some reason. So it was me and at that time, three different kids. And it was raining and I was stressed and I was sad about the dog and whatever. And we were driving and Judah wasn't into it. And he started whining about it. And Dad, how long is this going to take? And Dad, when are we going to go home? And it was my birthday. And I said, Judah, and we try not to say the S word in our family. I said, would you just shut up? And I yelled at him just like that. And the whole car got really quiet. And we don't, that's not how we talk. And to this day, this is a year and a half later. If you would ask him, hey, has your dad ever said shut up? He said, yeah, I remember when it was his birthday. I'm actually convinced that Judah forgets that our dog was lost for 42 days. But he remembers when I said shut up. He remembers when I wasn't Prowse. And I didn't go to bed happy. I didn't go to bed feeling like justified, like he deserved it. I went to bed sad that I messed up. I messed it up. And I just think, man, if I'm going to love my wife, if I'm going to serve this church, if I'm going to raise my kids, if I'm going to be a good friend, man, Prowse is a non-negotiable. And as it turns out, Jesus isn't looking to just add this to my life just so that others will be blessed by it, even though they will. But in the long run, man, I go to bed and I go, man, I'm happier. This is the way of love. This is the better way. This is the Jesus way. He's not out to get me. He's out to give me life and life to the full. And so I just conclude by saying, blessed are the meek. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And I think Jesus is right, and I want to keep finding out. Here's my closing question. With whom does God want me to be Prowse with this week? With whom does God want me to be Prowse with this week? It doesn't make a lot of sense for me that I'm the least Prowse with the people in my house, but it's true. And I'm just praying that God would give me the grace to grow up and be like Jesus. With whom does God want me to be Prowse with this week?
Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. To find out more about our church, to give online, or to attend a service, visit threecreekschurch.com.